Welcome to Well Versed, where we bring biblical principles of governance to governmental leaders and you. This is the Well Versed Podcast.
I want to welcome you to the special edition of Well Versed Podcast. Boy, do we have a special treat for you today. Oliver North, a man who's established a distinguished military career and quite frankly became a hero to Americans. I'll have him tell the story of why everybody knows the name in America, Ollie North. And then Richard Levine is on with us as well, equally distinguished with some really remarkable accomplishments. And they have just written a book entitled America's Number One Adversary and What We Must Do About It Now. Boy, if that doesn't get your attention, I don't know what will. I want to know about this book. And you're going to want to know how to get the book and begin reading it and get copies to hand out to your friends at this moment in American history. Oliver North and Richard Levine, welcome to the Well-Versed Podcast. A joy to have you with us.
Thank you, Jim. It's great to be with you again and be on this podcast of a well-versed world. If there's ever such a time, it's this right now. Biblical governance is what we're going to talk about today. And I just want to just share this because you know the story, but if you're under the age of 30, they probably don't, because that takes us back to the 80s when Richard and I first met each other at the National Security Council staff. The other two co-authors for this book are both men. We both served. And of course, we served in the administration of a fellow by the name of Ronald Reagan. So very quick background. I came to know our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ as my personal Savior. A great relationship with a fellow you and I both know well, now gone, but Dr. Edwin Lewis Cole, Maximized Manhood, was one of the very first.
You came to Christ through him?
No, actually through John Grinnells, a lieutenant.
Okay.
And because I was so new to this, because I had no background in it, I was raised Roman Catholic. Nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying I did not have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And here I am working with these remarkable men. And Richard is a policy director of the NSC. I'll let him tell his story. But these three men are the kinds of people I want to keep company with. John Grinnells led me to the Lord, not by what he said, but by the way he behaved. And I so much admired what he was and is. John Grinnells went on, and I joined for all the wrong reasons. He and I were assigned at the Marine headquarters in 1975. And John reached over partition between our little cupolas and said, I want you to become my operations officer in a battalion that's about to leave for the Mediterranean, a dangerous assignment. It was one of our sister battalions. It was blown up in Beirut. And those kinds of experiences back in the 70s led me to believe this is a man who knows his Lord and Savior, because when he told me, here, read this book on the way across the Atlantic. And I started on Genesis and wondered who he was, right?
Wow.
And I got to Matthew's gospel just as we pulled in the rota, and I almost quit at Leviticus. I mean, it's it was first time through, you know, it's the only book I've ever read more than twice in my life. And I constantly turn to it. I turned to it this morning. We had a Bible study that has been meeting here for 30 years. And I look at what those guys have done, the fellows in this Bible study. We've stayed together for 30 years. Some have come, some have gone. Joe Gibbs was part of it for a while, then he moved down to North Carolina. But the bottom line of it is keeping company with people who know where they are going and why they are going there is very important to me. And so I love being with you. I love being with Dr. Edwin Lewis Cole. I love Paul. I've been on his show. That's the kind of people I love to keep company with.
Take us back to how you became a household name. You were on the national news every day for quite a long time. Give a snapshot. Can you give a snapshot in just a couple minutes of what happened?
Sure. For 9 months, starting in November of 1986, all the way through the summer of 1987, I was on national television every single day because the National Press Corps lined up in front of our house in Great Falls, Virginia. And every day they would be lined up across the front gate. And my lawyers had told me, don't run over any of them. And so I got carried away a couple of times. And there was once a time when they literally lined across, I would have to run over somebody. So I'm going very slowly, easing forward. And one of them held up the front page of the Washington Compost. which is a newspaper here in the D.C. area. Yes. And it said something like, you know, Oliver North gave away Nancy Reagan's shoes to help the Contras, or dealt badly with the Iranians, didn't get the money they should have gotten for our efforts to rescue American hostages. Long story short, my answer is, I read, the reporter's question was, I read two things every day. I read from the Holy Bible, and I read from that newspaper so I can keep up with what both sides are up to. Spiritually, you know, we're talking about biblical governance. The bottom line of it is, my, if you will, fame, to some others, infamy, began with my time at working at the side of Ronald Reagan and the gentleman who wrote this book, all of whom I admire.
And you were accused of what, and then went through what? And we'll only spend a couple minutes on this because I want to get into your book. But I want people to understand why. As we watched you, none of us knew who you were before that time. As we watched you, America, you won America's heart. They saw a patriot. They saw a man with integrity, with honesty. You literally won the heart. The more they attack you, the more Americans had the instinct to defend you because they knew who you were, a man of quality. It was remarkable. You became a hero all across America. You're surely aware of that. But help those who are younger to know what, just two more sentences or two more minutes of what you actually went through, what actually you were accused of, and what happened during that time frame.
Well, the accusations went to 23 count indictment from a special prosecutor. But the bottom line of it was what they expected up on the Hill, and some Republicans, but mostly Democrats, they expected me to accuse the President of the United States of crimes. And they just picked the wrong guy to do that with. Never hire a Marine if you want to do something the wrong way. So
that's right. They were going, you were a sacrificial lamb. They wanted Reagan. That's who they wanted.
Yep.
And they needed you to get to him. Yeah.
He made a special offer to us, literally the night before I was indicted. And that's the day I retired from the United States Marine Corps after 22 years as an officer. I loved my time in the Marine Corps. I loved keeping company with American heroes. I did that for 22 years as a U.S. Marine. Retired because I did not want the Marine Corps to go through what I knew was going to happen over the course of the next 5 years. It went twice to the Supreme Court. And ultimately, just think of the connections in life. Because Antonin Scalia was put on the court when my case was going before the Supreme Court. It was 5-4 in favor of me. Antonin Scalia, of course, is the role model for a new nominee to the Supreme Court. And you think about the attack that she's going through right now, and I see the same kind of thing happening that happened to me 3 decades ago.
Well, let me just summarize. For those of you not familiar with the whole story, we're talking to an American hero right now. And Ollie North, I cannot tell you how honored I am to be interviewing you today. This means a lot to me personally. I'm going to go to your colleague now, Richard Levine. Richard, give us an overview of your life. You have a remarkable history as well with high-level government. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Wrap it in just about a three-minute span if you can, but we want to hear your story.
Well, thank you so much. 40 years ago, I first met my good friend Ollie North when we both worked in the defense group of the National Security Council staff. Now, back then, it was not the NSC staff, which puts together issues for the president. So the president has the full breadth of options from the various cabinet agencies and departments. Our professional staff was only 56. Under the Obama administration, it ballooned to 400. So we were a very close-knit group. And after serving a number of years on the defense group on the NSC staff, I then became the deputy director and then the director of international economic affairs, working on many trade issues that had a defense or national security component. I then, at the end of my tenure on the National Security Council staff, worked on a number of strategic issues and became the director of policy development. A friend of both Ollie's and mine, Dr. John Layman, Secretary of the Navy, then invited me to be the first Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Technology Transfer and Security Assistance. And in that role, I believe during my tenure, we sold more weapons to allies than had ever occurred before in peacetime, strengthening alliances with NATO, allies in the Middle East, allies in Asia. And also, I prevented the transfer of illicit technology. For instance, we stopped the transfer of a midship submarine to North Korea. I also was at the forefront of exposing the multi-access machine tool illicit sales to the Soviet Union, which allowed them to quiet their submarines and cost our Navy, I don't know, perhaps tens of billions of dollars. And that was at the time a very controversial thing to make public. The State Department was against it, other entities in government were against it, but it set a new plateau of openness with Japan, a close ally. One of the Japanese companies had been selling the equipment illicitly in violation of what used to be called COCOM controls. A graduate, honors graduate of the Johns Hopkins University. I have a background in philosophy. I'm also a graduate of the Harvard Business School with an MBA. I've also worked a bit in Hollywood. I'm a very fortunate man to be with my wonderful wife, for Terry, for 28 years. And she was with me through a very difficult episode in my life when I was quite ill. And Terry and her family have the most marvelous story, in that Terry's ancestors were with Father Sarah in the 18th century and were involved in building half of the mission churches. And my wife
Wait a minute. Back to start that sentence again. Say that's remarkable. That's a big deal here in San Diego. Say that again.
Well, Terry's family, the R.C. and Dominguez, as in Dominguez Hills, met, as far as we can determine. Now, this is the kind of complex history that Americans need to know. When that statue of Father Sarah was pulled down outside San Francisco, it was said that Father Sarah abused indigenous peoples. Well, my wife, as far as we can determine, is 1/6 Juanino Indian, which were the indigenous people who Father Sarah converted to Roman Catholicism. And from my research, I believe Terry's ancestors joined Father Sarah. I believe the year was 1756. Then they made a pilgrimage through Baja California, where my wife still has relatives, and then went up and, both during and after Father Sarah's life, built the mission churches, of which one was burned tragically. And that is a very suspicious fire that did in that wonderful 275-year-old church. But the global point I'm trying to make is, if you look at my wife's family, which is part Spanish, part Indigenous American, part Irish, part German, you see that some of Terry's relatives go back, the Spanish go back to the conquistadors. So of course, initially there was abuse of indigenous people, but later the Spanish married the indigenous people. So we have in one family a very complex dynamic. And it was all through belief in Christ that they were able to come together and truly form a family. And it's just a wonderful story. And we have pictures going back over 100 years of Terry's ancestors at the various missions in traditional Indian dress. So the notion that is put forth by the leftists today that indigenous people somehow scorned Father Sarah is just simply not true. And if you look at Father Sarah's life, the person he was hardest on was himself. In fact, he may have died due to wounds inflicted by self-mortification. So that's a bit of background.
Well, and very interesting. Father, for those who are not sure who this is, Father Junipero Serra is the founder of San Diego. Big deal to those of us who live here. I'm going to jump right in, with your permission, right into your book. You have written a book with a rather jolting title, America's Number One Adversary and What We Must Do About It Now. Did I get the title right?
You got it right.
Okay, somebody tell me who is America's number one adversary and what must we do about it now?
Well, I've got his picture right here on the cover of the book. Okay, this is the book. The president already has a copy of this book. And so should every viewer and every listener to this podcast. So here's the deal. For every book sold from today forward, Fidelis Publishing will send the Trump campaign $1. Okay? And you can go right now, order directly from Amazon.com. Or if you want to save a couple of bucks per book, you can go to unisonbooks.com/adversary. Either way, you get the book. And the president has a copy of this book because it lays out what only he can do. And
Well, who is America's number one adversary?
Well, there it is, Xi Jinping. And what Richard—
And who is he? Who is he? So everybody's with us.
Well, if you asked him, he would say he's the president of China. But in fact, his real awesome power comes from being literally a dictator. Now, our country's at a crossroads. Our very existence as a free nation in control of our own destiny is at grave risk due to this guy's communist government of the People's Republic of China. Absolute power is wielded by Xi Jinping. He's the Secretary General of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of China. He's also Commander-in-Chief of China's military, Chairman of their Central Commission for Integrated Military and Civilian Development. And such a combination of civilian and military authority in China in one man is a daunting idea in an undemocratic state. And what Richard and his colleagues, and my colleagues as well, put together, it shows how Xi Jinping is employing all the levers of power against the Chinese people, the United States, and our democratic allies. It's all in this book. The PRC's theft of intellectual property threatens our national security. Xi's willingness to allow tons of illicit drugs to be dumped on other nations endangers millions of people. His phony territorial claims over vast expanses of open seas and the erection of man-made military bastions all over the otherwise oceans of the Western Pacific provide visual proof of his determination to dominate that region. But it's worse. Even more menacing are the PRC's overt and covert actions to thwart UN sanctions against Tehran, which ensures the Ayatollahs in Iran will obtain nuclear weapons and the means of delivering them. There's also credible evidence. Richard unearthed some real intelligence here. Credible evidence that the Communist Party in China was instrumental in the worldwide spread of COVID-19, which has literally put millions and millions of people out of work. It's taken the lives of at least a couple of million. We don't really know because some don't report accurately. Religious freedom in China is non-existent. Democracy in Hong Kong has been crushed. The economies in dozens of developing countries are threatened by Beijing's so-called Belt and Road Initiative. And here at home, the Communist Chinese plan, their campaign of disinformation, encourages Marxists and anarchist vandals to loot and burn in our country. And as Richard and the other two authors of this book document, the pace of Beijing's campaign of domination has been accelerating. And what these three God-fearing friends helped Ronald Reagan do was win the Cold War against what Ronald Reagan accurately called an evil empire. They bring 15 decades of matchless experience to bear on the question, how must the United States respond to the existential threat to our country posed by Xi Jinping and the PRC? If Xi's PRC succeeds, every place on our planet will be plunged into the abyss that George Orwell warned us about in his book, 1984. My children and my 18 grandchildren deserve better than being forced to exist in a totalitarian world where Chinese-built computers, artificial intelligence, surveillance systems, and technology monitor their every move, the words that they utter, and with whom they keep company. That is not freedom. And what Richard and his colleagues did in this, all I did was the foreword. But the 70 specific actions they recommend in this book and actually can carry it out will be a blueprint for the years ahead, with one caveat. We the people, have to reelect Donald Trump as president of the United States and commander in chief. Now, Richard's got the 70, he's got them all memorized. So Richard, you come on in and tell us the recommendations that are most important that we have to implement, and only President Trump's going to do it.
Can, before you go to recommendations, you really went through quite a list here. Colonel North, could would you be able to just repeat? You listed about 10, 12, 13 things. I was jotting down as fast as I could. Can you list them one more time for our listeners? Because that you went through it pretty rapidly. The threat, the actual threats from China right now happening. Can you list those one more time?
Then and Richard will correct my memory if it's. But he's got a masterful way of doing this. So here it is. Here's the short list. Okay, they use Xi and the PRC and therefore the Politburo in Beijing are using all of the levers of power against the Chinese people, the United States, and our democratic allies. There's theft of intellectual property, which Richard discovered. No one else was doing anything about all this. It's a grave threat to our national security.
Help people know what the average person might not necessarily know, taking intellectual property. What does that mean?
Well, let's
understand what you're saying, but what does that mean?
He described an effort to export by a, quote, friendly nation, a corrupt company, the effort to send a mini submarine off to the People's Republic of North Korea. Okay, so the same kind of thing has been happening with every national security project we've had the last 35 years with these guys. What they do is they'll buy one somewhere, or they'll send a student here to study it. Most of the students that are studying the hard sciences here from communist China were actually offered the opportunity to come to the United States, study in the United States, and then take home the intellectual property that colleges and universities are developing all over this place. So you got the false territorial claims, you've got the illicit drugs, you got the overt and covert actions of the Beijing government to thwart the UN sanctions against Tehran, which practically guarantees that the Ayatollahs are going to have the means to deliver nuclear weapons against us and Israel. Okay. There's also very credible evidence that the Communist Party of China was instrumental in the worldwide spread of COVID-19. I don't know. Richard doesn't know. We don't know for certain how it started over there, but clearly it was spread because of the actions of the Communist Party. Religious freedom in China is non-existent. Democracy in Hong Kong has been crushed. Those are the kinds of things that we ought to be caring about, and we haven't been. That's why this is a book for the president. So the economies in dozens of developing countries are threatened by Beijing's Belt and Road Initiative, in which they come in.
Oh, what was the initiative? What was the initiative? What's that called?
The Belt and Road Initiative. No, I mean, by the way, everybody needs to read this book because it's very amply explained in here. So their disinformation campaign started by what they call the Confucius Institutes. Hundreds of them are encouraging Marxists and vandals and anarchists to loot and burn our cities and ignore the very straightforward ideology, the Judeo-Christian value system that's in our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution, to which we all swore an oath to support and defend. I mean, I think what we're seeing is a campaign of domination that's been accelerating. That's why these guys' book is so important.
Very good. Richard, I'm going to turn to you now for I've had Ollie go through a second time because I recognize many of the people listening to this podcast may be very attuned to the news, and they understood exactly what Ollie was saying. However, some may not be, and I want to make sure I don't lose any of them. I want to make sure they grasp how serious this is, and it's become even more serious with the revelations of the last few days with the emails that have emerged with Hunter Biden involving his father. This now puts it on steroids as if it wasn't already serious enough. But let's have you talk to us now about, based upon all of these very serious threats, from Ping and from PRC in China, what are the specific actions or recommendations you have for us?
Well, we have 70 different actions, as Ali stated, and I could go through them, but I first want to talk to your audience about the overarching threat. And the overarching threat that China poses, which is being emulated within the United States, in both California and in New York, is the deification of the state. This is a cardinal risk for our country, because if all the powers of the state are fused with a religious devotion to the state, then freedom of religion is lost. And this is what communism has always posed. And in terms of answering it, we first have to bring the faithful in America into the crux of politics to ensure that the state in America, our government, is always limited and not totally expansive. Ali talks about China representing a new 1984 in terms of scoring every citizen, all 1.4 billion, in terms of how well they enact the state's prerogatives and directives. God forbid that should ever come to the United States. Yet we see evidence that exactly that kind of thing is happening with the technocracies on the West Coast, with financial interests on the East Coast. And I may be paraphrasing a very great scholar, Shelby Steele, but I believe he said some time ago that America's problem is that the billionaire class never moved through the middle class on their way to wealth. This is a fundamental issue that we have to face. Now, in terms of your question, first of all, the time urgent transmission of intelligence. I believe that our president, Donald Trump, had the best possible intuition about the Chinese threat and what to do about COVID, which we would call, in engineering parlance, a multivariate problem, meaning you're not only solving to reduce near-term fatalities, you have to preserve America. You have to preserve our economic system, our security structures. And Donald Trump tried to have a comprehensive basket of actions that would address all these needs, whereas the press is creating a false narrative that it's only the question of near-term fatalities. Well, most of those fatalities were caused by Democratic governors and mayors who put the most at-risk people, seniors, people with comorbidities, back into convalescent homes to spread the virus. I mean, it's truly appalling. But back to what we should do. America, since truly the dawn of the Atom Age, had a capability to diagnose how far along other nations were in developing nuclear weapons and the delivery systems such as ballistic missiles and bombers. We have to create a similar capability, which will be much more difficult to do with regard to biological threats. Now, one of the big things we recommend is to reorder the intelligence priorities of America to focus on the People's Republic of China, because, and I want your listeners to understand this, China, great people, but they've been subjugated and abused by a communist junta since 1949 on the Chinese mainland. China is a culture that goes back and a civilization that goes back 4,000 years. So they don't have to be under this oppressive yoke. We love the Chinese people. We hate the Communist Party of China, which has done so much to denigrate the rights of the people in Tibet, the Uyghurs. So we have to reformulate our intelligence targets to put the People's Republic of China number one, with particular emphasis on the machinations globally of the Communist Party of China. Then we have to focus, number two, on emerging biological threats. And I've written about new technologies that will allow the engineering in future of pernicious viruses. This is a grave threat to the world that we must get on top of. And God knows who was not on top of it. That's the UN organization that became fast friends with China rather than exposing and demanding that data from the Wuhan lab became available. Instead, it was totally sequestered and then destroyed. Now, of course, we also have a threat of weapons of mass destruction and terrorists who might employ such weapons. And there, too, what Ali said about the propagation of weapons of mass destruction through Chinese means is another unprecedented challenge. Then I'll just talk briefly about the Chinese Belt and Road Initiative. One of the things we recommend in the book is with our great alliance with the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom, as the British Empire withered after World War II, it set up the Commonwealth of Nations, which is 54 nations. And these are all the nations, well, at least most, who had been involved with the British Empire. We're not part of it as the United States, but we can use those countries with good alliances with them to push off the Chinese, because the Chinese model of expropriation is something that we refer to in the book as loan, build, seize. They loan money on terms that in many cases can never be repaid by the developing country who takes out a developmental loan for a bridge, for a shipyard, for any large piece of infrastructure. And then the Chinese have terms where they actually can appropriate those assets. Now, Russia has done a similar thing as well. But of course, what you have to know about China is their economy is very close to ours in GDP. Now, they have 4.25 times as many citizens as we do. Per capita, they're certainly not as wealthy as the average American. But if you look at the numbers, we're a country of a fourth of China's population. They have 1.4 billion people. So as they approach developed nations in per capita income, they'll have matchless economic supremacy. One of the big things we recommend is a much closer alliance with India, because India is the only other nation on earth that has a population similar to China's. Many projections show India having a dominant economy by the year 2100, and India is the world's most numerous democracy today. So with India, with Japan, with Australia, we can begin to put together a countervailing alliance that could limit Chinese aggression.
This is a lot. I've done a lot of podcasts. I've taken more notes on this one, probably 3 to 4 times the number of notes I've ever taken in a single podcast. The average person reading this book is not a power broker in Washington, D.C. They don't have access to people of high influence. What can they do and what should they do in light, other than reading the book and becoming understanding the issues and becoming reasonably articulate on the issues? What do they do next to try to make a difference for the sake of themselves and their family?
It's two words: pray and vote. Okay. And I'm very serious about this. And that's why we're giving, for example, I mentioned it before, from this day forward, we are giving to every purchaser who buys this book from Amazon.com or from UnisonBooks.com for $2 less, by the way, slant adversary, UnisonBooks.com, slant adversary, $2 off, Amazon.com as well. We'll give $1 to the Trump campaign, because at Fidelis Publishing, this is, by the way, our very first book. There are parts of this book were published earlier in two different outlets, but this is the only direct compilation of all that Richard and Admiral Poindexter and Bud McFarlane have been working on for months. The bottom line of it is pray for our country and vote, because we the people are supposed to govern. First three words of that Constitution that I took an oath to support and defend for 22 years, I'll bet I administered that oath more times than I can count, right? To every Marine that re-enlisted, to every guy coming into the service who wanted to join us. My brothers and I also served in every branch of the armed forces. I didn't cover the Coast Guard. But my involvement in this is passionate. And if I'm suggesting one of the things you can also do is to give financially to the various campaigns that reflect those same kinds of voter, if you will, attitudes that Richard and I have just expressed.
the Fidelis Publishing. When you say it's your first book, it's the first book of Fidelis Publishing.
Yes.
Which is operated by a mutual friend of ours, Gary Tereshit, a wonderful brother. But it's not your for Ollie. You have lots of books out, I believe. Do you not?
I do. And they're all about the kind of people I like to keep company with, American heroes. Like, the classical definition of a hero is a person who puts themselves at risk for the benefit of others. That's what Richard's done. Admiral Poindexter did it. Bud McFarland did it. Every person serving in our military today has done it. And I say that we the people are the first three words of that Constitution. We're unique on the planet Earth, by the way. And Richard is not only a great scientist, Richard is also a great historian. And we're the only country on the planet Earth that begins and has in the middle of it and at the end of our foundational documents, a prayer, belief in an almighty who's well above any of the rest of us, who we know we can pray and our prayers are answered, not necessarily always with the way we thought they would be. You and I have gone through those kinds of things with people we loved. Didn't turn out quite the same as what we'd hoped. But nonetheless, our prayers are heard and reflect the care that our Creator has for us. And that's the enormous difference between, and Richard summed that up, I think, beautifully. That's the enormous difference between the way we govern and we're governed and what we're looking at as our adversary, Communist China.
You have referenced there's two other authors. The two other authors of this book are?
Bud McFarland and John Poindexter. Admiral Poindexter and Bud McFarland were both national security advisors to President Ronald Reagan. And we all, Richard and I included, are enormous admirers of what he accomplished. He had the temerity to go on a worldwide fora and describe our adversary at the time as an evil empire. That was the Soviet Union.
Yeah. I have a question as it relates to President Trump and then as a candidate for President Biden. President Trump, your interactions with him, I serve on the Trump Faith Advisory Board, or it used to be called that back in the 2016, and it's morphed in name, and now it's just simply called Evangelicals for Trump. In your interactions or opportunities with the administration, our president, apparently from what you're saying, understands the dynamics of what you're covering in this book, number one. The other part of that question is, candidate Biden, this is an unpleasant question to ask, should he become president, what does that mean, particularly in light of the emails was most recently discovered between Hunter Biden involving his father as it relates to the Communist Party of China? What does that mean for us? Let's start with the first part, and that is, our president and the current administration, at least key people, understand the dynamics of what you're stating. Is that accurate?
Yes. And look, I've been around Washington, you know, a long time. Every time I'm here in January I've gone to the March for Life, right? That's a very profoundly important factor in my life, right? We have never had a president, not even the one that Richard and I worked for that we admire so much, who's ever gone out and said, every child, born and unborn, is made in the image and likeness of God.
Absolutely.
Okay? We've never had that before.
Yeah.
That's the kind of extraordinary courage he's demonstrating. And of course, that's one of the reasons why, you know, the Supreme Court nominee that he sent forward is going to face some really tough, you know, going here in the days ahead. I don't have the gift of prophecy, but I'm willing to wager that she's going to be the next justice on the Supreme Court. Now, the second part of your question, what do we have? None of the good things that have happened, either culturally or economically or jobs or national security, none of those things will be the same if his adversary, Joe Biden, is elected. The question really needs to be before the American people. How is it that an internet service provider can censor a story in the New York Post? I mean, I find that to be absolutely stunning, particularly given what I faced back in the 1980s when we had the National Press Corps lined up in front of our house every single day. They were there Christmas, Easter, Passover, Lent, Tet, every religious holiday. They were there for 9 months. Okay. And I look at that and say, what the heck? Why? How is it that no one is asking him these questions? Did you take money from the Communist Chinese? Did you have those meetings with the folks from the Ukraine? Did you talk to anybody in China about what your son was doing? Because he's really not an expert on energy. Richard, I defer to your intelligence.
Well, what I would say is what Biden represents is the kind of multiplicity of powers that China uses with, we have a line in the book that with millions, one can buy billions. Another thing we say is the corrupted know the corrupt. This is what, unfortunately, a Biden president, which God forbid if he is elected, I think his presidency will last just a matter of months because he is certainly not up to the task. But it's making common cause with China. We see this on in how the giant American corporations work that seemingly have no problem working with China to develop ever more intrusive means of surveillance, or the NBA questioning all the foundations of America, but none of the Communist Party of China. Let's make no mistake, through the Cultural Revolution and the Great Leap Forward, Mao was responsible for the death of tens of millions of Chinese. Now, why is that? Well, China is a materialistic country. That is the definition of communism. America's great strength is that we were founded on two principal supports, the spiritual and the material. And having those two supports, it prevents our country from extremism in any given pursuit. This was what the founding fathers studied in terms of France, in terms of the kings of England, the excesses. And this is what they thankfully crafted to avoid that happening here. But we see now in America that people turn to government for all their needs. If you do not believe in life after life, you think you have to erect a heaven on this planet, but that is impossible. The French Revolution, the Russian Revolution, even what happened in Germany and certainly what happened in China, it was all based on coming up with nirvana in this world. The first thing we have to demand of all our political elites and leaders is they must manifest the urgent belief that heaven is only attainable through God, not through the state. Because if you believe the state has primacy over the individual, the American dream is forever lost.
As I've been listening to you two men, I just don't want this podcast to end. Unfortunately, it has to. I'd really like 2 to 3 more hours. As I was listening to you, I thought, boy, these are two guys. When I watch the news, I wish they were sitting on the sofa with me, and I turn it off every once in a while. And say, now, help me understand what was just said there. Give me the background. I've watched the news every day since age 8. I've felt a calling on governmental ministry to come on my life since August the 13th of 1956, when I was 9 years of age. But I know when I'm around people who understand it a lot more than me, and you are a blessing. You are a gift of God to us. We're in a crisis moment. I don't know if the average person grasps that we are on the cusp of losing all the freedoms we've had for over 200 years. We are this far away from losing it all. This is not about Republican versus Democrats, not about right versus left. It's about right versus wrong and good versus evil. That is what we're facing right now. This is a crisis moment. I thank you for standing. Thank you for writing this book. I am eager to see this book. I don't have a copy yet. I'm very eager to get a copy. Gary undoubtedly will send me one. I want to see what you've got. And I want to encourage everybody to get this book. The title again, America's Number One Adversary, and what we must do about it, not what we can, what we must do about it now. I love the urgency of this title. It's commensurate with the crisis that we're now facing. Tell them one more time, where can they get America's Number One Adversary and what we must do about it now? Where can they get it?
There it is. You go to Amazon.com. And if you're a Prime member, you get free shipping. Or if you want to save $2 per book, go to Unison, that's UNISON books.com/adversary. And you can get this book, read it before you vote. If you know people who already voted, fine, give them a copy anyway. They can spread the word and help to save this country. And as I said, pray, pray, and vote. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Oliver North. You're known across America and have been known for a long time as one of the great heroes. Richard Levine, it's an honor to meet you, and you likewise are a hero for how you have stood through all this time. So it's an honor to know you both. Thank you for coming on with me. Folks, we thank you so much for joining us on Well-Versed World. Go to wellversedworld.org, wellversedworld.org. Our mission is to bring biblical principles of governance to government leaders and to the people who elect them. Wellversedworld.org. We invite you to go there. Blessings on you, and thank you for being a part of this Well-Versed podcast.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please read the show notes for additional details if you would like a copy of the book or resources mentioned. Remember that Well-Versed is a 501c3 tax-deductible nonprofit organization. We rely on your support and partnership.
Thank you for listening to the Well-Versed podcast. For more information, please go to www.wellversedworld.org.